Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
One time I sat down with an owner of a public company and I asked him, how old were you when you started feeling that you are wealthy? He thought for a moment and he said, I don't think I'm wealthy yet. And I was surprised. You know, he has a public company and, you know, he's worth tens of millions of dollars. And I asked him, why do you feel that? And he said, I don't have a private jet, you know. And then a few years later, I had this meeting with a person who had a private jet. I asked the same thing. And he said, no, I'm not wealthy. I'm so small. When he pulls over to the special security terminal, he feels so small because his private jet is so tiny compared to the other jets, which can seat like 200 people. It's a jumbo jet, right? So whenever I pull over to this terminal, I feel like I have no money because the other guys have big airplanes, you know. And then I had another opportunity to talk with somebody who has a big jet. And he said, no, I'm not wealthy because my private jet is the standard jet. I haven't spent a penny on just changing my seats and everything. My friend has a special jet who's from Arabic country. He changed all the seats, you know, so they have a special leather. And it costs them as much money as to order a private jet because inside seats are super expensive. So where do you want to go and how much is enough for you? Unless you have the number, you will never feel that you have more than enough.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Ken, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much, Srini, for inviting me. I'm so honored to be here.
Yeah, so I was contacted by your publicist, and funny enough, I had actually read your book before when somebody sent happy money to me. And when they contacted me again, I thought, yes, I definitely want to talk to Ken. I loved his book. I loved his philosophy on all of this. But before we get into the book, I wanted to start by asking you, where were you born and raised, and what impact did that end up having on your life, the choices you've made with your career, as well as your perspective on money?
Yeah, thank you for asking. I was born in Kobe, Japan, west part of Japan, right next to Kyoto. And Kobe is a very open port city. Our sister city is Seattle in North America. So you know what it's like, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful port city. People are open. And my father was one of the most successful tax accountants in town. And he started teaching me about money since I was 5 or 6. So I had this early money education that nobody that I know of has ever received. Mm-hmm. So I already knew about ROI and all that in my grade school. And I was surprised that a school teacher didn't know anything about money.
Yeah.
So I started just learning more about money in a practical sense. So I started my business when I was 20, and I could retire for my baby girl when I was 29 for 4 years. And during the four semi-retirement years, I got this inspiration to write a little essay. The essay got extended to short essays and booklet, and eventually became a book, and the rest is history. I published about 120 or 30 books and sold about 9 million copies, most of which is focused on money and happiness and entrepreneurship.
Well, you know, one thing that I wonder about is how the Western way of thinking about money is different from the Japanese way of thinking about money. Because I think that one of the things that I have observed is that when you look at sort of the Eastern way of thinking, it's a much more holistic approach. Whereas I feel like here, or at least in Western cultures, our thinking, not just about money, but about everything, tends to be much more individualistic. And I wonder kind of how overall in Japanese culture, people think about this.
So for money, in terms of money, I think Japanese people tend to think money is like a social asset. So even though you don't have it, your friends may have it, or somebody else has it. So whereas in North America and Europe, it's very individualistic. It's either my money or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how does that dynamic end up impacting, you know, social relationships, relationships with family, and just the connections that people have with each other when we have that dynamic?
I think you will eventually have more fear around money and survival. Now, I was so surprised that in North America, people don't talk about money. Whereas like Japanese and Asian culture, we talk about money more openly. But the funny thing is, you know, in North America, people don't talk about or reveal their sexual life openly, but they're so shy about talking their financial life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But in Asian countries, you know, at school alumni, you know, after like 10 years or 20 years after college graduation, we openly talk about our financial life, right? How much you're making, you know, Srini, like you may. And you say, like, I made this much. Wow, the drinks are on you, you know, stuff like that.
you're right. Like, we definitely never would do that in Western culture. Right? Like, nobody would ever openly ask you.
Right? So we never talk about sexual thing. So if you're shocked by getting asked about your financial life, you can ask your Japanese friend, how is your sexual life? And then you get the same results.
Wow. That's hilarious. One thing that I wonder, you mentioned that, you know, you were stunned to know that, you know, even your teachers didn't know about money. And I think that it's mind boggling to me that we could get all the way through college. Like, I'll give you an example. When you go into your student loan interview in the first few days of college, nobody really, basically you just sign a piece of paper. The money for your tuition is in your account, or your tuition's paid. The money is in your account to, you know, basically live for the semester. And I think if a lot of college students had a realistic picture of what they were getting themselves into, they would be like, wait a minute, this is like a loan shark, you know, from the Goodfellas handing me a loan. Because it's almost like if you had brought in a mobster in there who basically said, all right, this is how you're going to pay for college. And if you don't give me this money back, I'm going to break your legs. Most of them wouldn't sign. And yet they make it so easy. And you don't really get a sense of the implication of just how much debt you're taking on. Which I think that, you know, that segues well into some of the ideas in the book. But like, when you think about what we're not teaching to young people, I know that you mentioned you have kids as well. What do you think we should be teaching about money, and how soon should we be teaching it in school?
You know, I don't want to sound too political, but I feel sorry for North American kids because, you know, it's not quite fair where we are born into. Really depends on our financial future. Because, you know, college tuition is only like, say, $5,000 for a whole year in Japan.
Yeah.
And I thought that's ridiculously expensive. But in North America, if you go to like Harvard or Princeton, you know, the college tuition is astronomical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, say, I gave a talk in Copenhagen, Denmark. And in Denmark, if you're enrolled in college, all the higher education is free.
Yeah.
And then at the age of 30, if you're making enough money, you need to pay back the loan. But if not, you don't have to pay anything. And the only thing is, the big difference is that you get 800 euros, like $800 per month to buy books and like other things for college students. But in North America, you know, government, they don't give you $800 that so simply that you're enrolled in college. So, yeah. And I think a lot of young American kids don't know that what they're signing into, because everybody seems to fall into this debt trap that you don't know what you're getting into. But when you come to think of it, like a social securities and medical thing care in many European countries and in Japan, it's fairly affordable. Like I went to a dentist the other day and the bill is only $8. It's not $800 because, you know, government gives you Medicare. So it depends on where you're born and brought up. Your financial future is so depends on your culture, your social system as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you don't know, and also you're not educated in that other countries they have certain things, you know. So it's not quite fair, but that's how the world works.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Well, let's get into the book. I think that one of the first things that struck me, you said, is that there are so many emotions wrapped in our money. So many of us walk around mm-hmm. with all this energy, and it impacts not only ourselves, but others as well. We like to think that money is just a number or a piece of paper, but it's so much more than that. Money brings with it so many emotions, more than we even realize. So
yes,
the thing that I wonder about is when we talk about money, this part of the story is almost always left out unless it happens to be somebody who is, you know, smart enough to have read one of your books or lucky enough to have stumbled on it. So why is it that this part of the money conversation is just generally left out of the narrative? Because if you even look online in general around articles on finances that are on a website, it's all very practical. You know, this is how you do this. This is how you do that. All of which is pretty straightforward, but nobody talks about this. Why is this aspect of the way we talk about money not more prevalent?
That is a very deep question, Srini. I often wonder about that. But people are confused about money emotionally. That's why I think they try to stay away from emotional part of what's going on in financial life. You know, mm-hmm. for example, since sexual issues are another taboo, think about it. You know, when we think of sexual contact, it's almost like you are dealing with what you're supposed to do, what you're not supposed to do. And just if you leave out the emotional part, it's not fun anymore, right? Mm-hmm. It's like practical, what to do, what's your next step. You know, now yeah. you just take off your clothes and what's next, you know? So if you just leave out this emotional romantic energy, there's not much juice in it. And this money issue is the same thing. It brings you so much joy, you know, on the positive side. It brings up the best from you. It brings you joy, happiness, bliss, you know, all the beautiful feelings, brings up generosity, friendship, and all that. But money also pulls out the worst from you. It could be hatred, resentment, anger, despair, and all kinds of negative emotions. And I think we are overwhelmed by the depth of both positive and negative emotions. So we try to put the cover on the lid. So no emotions. You know, let's not deal with it. Let's talk about numbers. So that's why I think what's going on in the world. And unfortunately, we are so heavily influenced by emotional issues around money, which I call that money EQ. But people are so preoccupied with money IQ, which is financial intelligence. But I have seen the most financially smart people make stupid mistakes emotionally, and they end up losing everything. So I think money EQ is more important than money IQ. In fact, you need both.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this idea of money EQ and money IQ. But first, how did you even come up with this idea of happy money? Because I'm really curious, like when we start to transform a relationship with money, you describe mm-hmm. happy money as, you know, money circulated with love, care, and friendship. And of course, like I can tell you, you know, like you point out in the book, I don't find paying taxes to be happy money. I don't do that with love, care, or friendship. When I pay taxes, uh-huh. it's more like fuck you to the government. You know, and I think that most people, if they were honest about paying taxes, would admit that that's kind of how they feel about taxes. Because like, we don't even see where the hell our tax dollars go. But tell me, one, how you arrived at this idea of happy money. And then what does it do when we start to look at money from this lens versus just through the pure numbers lens?
Right. So I was approached by this woman at the party in Japan. She said, can I take a look at your wallet? And I said, okay. At the time, there were many magazine articles and TV programs about celebrities' wallet. You know, wouldn't you be interested in president's wallet or Justin Bieber, Mariah Carey, or Taylor Swift, do they even have a wallet, you know, if or somebody takes care of that, right? So it was so interesting, like certain politicians, like our prime minister, had a leather wallet, you know, even though his secretary does it all, he has a credit card and a little cash in it. It's kind of cute, you know, when they have this, like a credit cards and other things. And then she just took all the bills out of my wallet and she was checking something. And I was more curious about what she's doing. And I was kind of looking at her, how she checked my money. And she was mumbling, oh, this is great. This is fun. Oh, this is great. So she put all the bills back into my wallet and gave it back to me. And she said, Ken, you passed the test. And I said, what test? All your money was smiling in your wallet. That means that you have made everybody happy around you and received money. That's why your money is smiling in your wallet. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. And she said, on the other hand, if you are taking advantage of other people, or if you do what you don't like and bring in the cash, your money is crying in your wallet or getting angry in your wallet. So I can tell who you are by looking at their wallet. And I was, wow, very interesting. And I started thinking of my friends' faces, like my friends who have a lot of smiling money in their wallet and my other friends who are entrepreneurs, but definitely this money is not smiling. So I think, you know, even though the money is money, there are two kinds of money. Money that brings you smile and money that brings you frustration. The same money, but it's how you relate with money. If you're making a lot of people happy and smile, your money come in as happy energy. But if you have a lot of frustrations and anger and resentment when you're making money, your money comes in with that energy. So just check yourself when you come back home from work. Do you bring in lots of happy energy to your house, or do you bring in lots of unhappy, unsettling energy? So I'm trying to cleanse myself when I just come back home. I try to cleanse the frustration and the stress from work. I don't have much to begin with, but I try to be neutral, and I become a very powerful, loving father and husband. And then I open the door. But unfortunately, most of us bring in bad energy with us. You know, we get frustrated. That's why we just get angry with kids or husband or wife or, you know, the people we deeply care about. But still, we get frustrated because we have so much stress with money.
Well, talk to me about the role that parents and sort of generational narratives play in all of this. Because you say in the book that when I ask a room full of people about stressful childhood experiences related to money, I inevitably hear something along the lines of, I wanted to take ballet classes, but my mom told me we couldn't afford it. Substitute ballet with baseball, gymnastics, ice skating, or any number of hobbies we dreamed of pursuing as children. And it's safe to say we've all heard that story in one form or another. And I can totally tell you that as immigrants, my parents couldn't afford to buy me a pair of Air Jordans. Air Jordans were expensive. They're $100. Yeah, for yes, a kid in seventh grade. That. Right. My dad was like, you're going to outgrow these in, you know, less than 6 months. And they were crazy expensive. And of course, other kids at school had them. So we wanted them. So talk to me about the role that the messages we receive from parents and the messages that they receive from their parents play. Because I think that another thing that matters here is also, at least for me, is the context. Because my parents, you know, being Indian immigrants, like for them, the narrative they received around money probably made a lot of sense given the environment that they were raised in. But then to bring that to an environment like the United States, I wonder how that will also impacts the way they think about things.
Yeah. So unfortunately, our money blueprint is made by our parents, like it or not. And then our parents are brought up by our grandparents. So whenever I give a money counseling, I used to ask my clients to draw their family line as far as long way back as possible. So I definitely talk about your parents and also potentially your grandparents and how they were doing emotionally and also financially. And oftentimes a scarcity mentality comes from our parents and original place is from your grandparents and also grandparents. You know, like 60 years ago, 90 years ago, there was depression, war, and all the bad things happened to their generation. And we are the result of the sufferings and pain through their generations.
So how do we begin to change that narrative? I mean, I've heard numerous versions of this. You know, we had Ramit Sethi here. And I think of all the things that he said to me that stayed with me in that conversation, he said most people spend their time focused on $3 questions like, you know, should I get the large latte or the small one, when we should really be asking ourselves $30,000 questions. That always stayed with me. But how do you begin to change all of this thinking about it? Like, how do you begin to start to change the underlying emotions so they, you know, we feel like we have more happiness?
Yeah, so I'm often called money healer because I focus on healing the traumas in the past. You know, a little thing that you're denied your dream basketball shoes, you know, it was so hurtful. I remember I was denied for a mountain bike. At the time, there were just, you know, very cool mountain bikes. And my parents said, that's too expensive for you. They meant you're too early, and they were right, because I hurt myself in a bike accident, you know, a few months later. I was not ready, but I was so hurt because they denied me, you know, they denied my worth. So I was so hurt because I was a bad boy or was not grown up enough or smart enough. So that kind of scar stays with us. So when we try to start our own business, when we try to do something, this voice inside us is saying, like, you're not worth it. And then we feel, like, scared, so we don't go out and start our own dream life. So by looking at what happened in your childhood, just look at your mom and dad. Maybe they're younger than you are now, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you can see your young parents were as confused as teenagers, you know, because they didn't know much about money. They were just simply scared to make both ends meet and bring up kids that they've never experienced before. Yeah. So do you understand what was going on in your family? At least can you understand what happened? And if you can you forgive them for not giving you whatever you needed? Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, it was impossible to do that. So if you just get the picture, you can understand it, you can forgive it. And then as an adult now, you can do anything you want. You don't have to get stuck in this scarcity mentality that there's not enough. And then when you take a look at the world, there's plenty in the world, you know, plenty of money in the world. It's not in your bank account. So you can borrow money. You can have somebody invest in your money. You can start making money. So all money is your money too. So once you got this understanding, yeah, you can increase your income. You can increase your asset as you wish. So money becomes more air than water and ice once you start living in a warmer environment. So get out of this cold, mean world and just live in a warmer environment. So one day, I hope money becomes air for you. You can breathe in as much as you want and then breathe out as much as you want. You don't have to worry about it. It's just there.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Something else I wonder as it relates to this generational piece, and this is out of personal curiosity. You have two siblings, right? So my sister and I are 5 years apart, and my dad was mainly getting his career off the ground when I was growing up. He's a college professor, and you know, he did a lot of postdoctoral work for pretty much the entirety of my childhood. He was a postdoc. By the time she got to elementary school, like fifth or sixth grade, my dad had become a tenured professor, so she had a really different experience of what their financial situation was like than I did. And I wonder how that impacts sort of the way that we live, the way that we, you know, tell our stories. I can tell you she definitely has, like, if you look at her overall history of our lives, both as adults, she's definitely done things that seem much more financially responsible than I have. And I wonder how much that sort of upbringing and the contrast would, you know, impact how we both experience money as adults.
Yes. It's so interesting to look at your siblings. And I understand that life is not fair. You know, if you, because the opposite thing could happen. You know, when you were small, your father had a lot of money, but after going bankrupt, your brothers and sisters don't have memories of, you know, you, your family being wealthy. So, yeah. You know, the reverse thing could happen as well. You know, it's interesting. Even though you're born and brought up in the same household by same parents under the same roof, your siblings could come out very differently. It's because of your money personality type. Mm-hmm. So it's more about your money personality type. You may be a gambler, you may be a moneymaker, and your sister and brothers, they could be saver, they could be spender. Depends on their personality. So it's not about your parents' financial situation. It's about who they are. And I think people are born with a certain characters, you know. They love to go parties where your brother wants to stay at home. You know, they have the same gene, but they're totally different animals. You know, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, so the thing is, it's funny because I'm an entrepreneur. I run a business, and I realize my sister I think the uncertainty of not having a consistent paycheck, I mean, she's told me more or less would drive her crazy. I don't think she would be able to handle it because, I mean, you know, her being a doctor, like things are pretty much set in stone, which I think really changes. That's one huge difference. Like I've had to learn to navigate ups and downs, you know, I mean, as anybody who runs a business does, and as you write about, there are going to be good months and there are going to be months that are not so good. And that I've heard is very common. Like one of my friends, maybe you can fact check this for me. I remember when we would have a bad month, he was a business partner of mine for a while. I would get really stressed out. And one of the things he'd always say to me is some of the wealthiest people in the world have tremendous variability in their income. And I that always stayed with me as, okay, you know, is that true? What is your view on that? Is that true when it comes to risk? And if you're doing something entrepreneurial, there's definitely going to be variability.
Yes, definitely. Because, you know, when you choose a path of entrepreneurship, one thing you don't have is security, unfortunately, you know, but you could end up getting a lot by taking the path, but you could end up losing everything. So that's a path of entrepreneurship. Once again, like as you sign the school loans, you know, and the same thing goes for entrepreneurship. You lose the freedom in terms of time and finance. So you may have to sell your soul to get your business going. You know, you may sacrifice your family, quality time. Sometimes you may sacrifice your marriage. Are you okay? And if this loan officer just, you know, explain everything and before you sign up for being an entrepreneur, a lot of people say, no, it's not worth it. You know, they realize after going into entrepreneurship, they realize that, you know, instead of working for 40 hours for somebody else, you work 80 hours for yourself. That's how entrepreneurship goes, right?
Yeah,
it's part of the package. So if you understand it, it's a reward, risk and reward. If you're a doctor, you know, you don't get like 10 times more money than entrepreneurs do, but at least they have the very good minimum security.
Yeah, so exactly.
And also, you know, entrepreneurs can design a whole day or whole year based on what you want. You know, you can live in North America, Europe, Africa, India, wherever you want to. But if you're a doctor, the clinic that you work in could really tie you to the location. So if you just settle for security, also you have this certain restrictions. So entrepreneurs, you have freedom to be wealthy, but freedom to be poor. So it's your choice.
So someone else you said about this in terms of the emotion piece, you said there's always an emotional drive behind wanting money. But if we become disconnected from the underlying emotions, we can get in a stuck in a cycle of trying to make money without understanding what we really need. And I think that struck me because, you know, my friend writer Carol wrote this beautiful book called The Bullet Journal Method. And we had him here as a guest. And I remember one of the things that struck me about that book was when people set financial goals, so often we just pick an arbitrary number, you know, because it sounds good. It's like, I want $1 million. And he said, we don't ever think about like, okay, what exactly do you need $1 million for? And I remember thinking about this. I was talking to a friend. I was like, you know what? I finally figured it out. It was like the joke. It's like, the only thing I need to become a billionaire for is to buy an NBA basketball. That's about the only thing that I can't necessarily get. That's the one thing that would require $1 billion is to buy a professional sports team.
Right.
But we don't really think about this. So why is it that we get set on these sort of arbitrary numbers? Like, it's like, you know, you say, it's like, I want to make $1 million. And you don't think about why. You just kind of say, that's it. That's the goal.
Yeah. So it's because we're living in a fantasy that if you have $1 million, I'd be safe. I'd be feeling secure. I'd be feeling more fun. But when you reach $1 million number, you realize that $1 million will not take you anywhere. And then you realize that many of your friends are making more money, and $1 million seems to be so small. And one time I sat down with a owner of a public company, and ask him, how old were you when you started feeling that you are wealthy? You know, he took his company public when he was 35. And I think the time I met him, it was like 40 or something, right? So I was expecting an answer when his company started taking off, like 28 or 29. He had a few million dollars in his bank account, something like that. But he thought for a moment and he said, I don't think I'm wealthy yet. And I was surprised. You know, he has a public company and, you know, he's worth tens of millions of dollars. And I asked him, why do you feel that? And he said, I don't have a private jet, you know. And what? And then a few years later, I had this meeting with a person who had a private jet. I asked the same thing. And he said, no, I'm not wealthy. I'm so small. When he pulls over to the special security terminal, he feels so small because his private jet is so tiny compared to the other jets, which can seat like 200 people. It's a jumbo jet, right? So his plane is so tiny. He says, you cannot fly across a Pacific Ocean. You know, I'll just drop in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. So my plane is so tiny. I cannot afford a big one. So whenever I pull over to this terminal, I feel like I have no money because the other guys guys have big airplanes, you know.
Yeah.
And then I had another opportunity to talk with somebody who has a big jet. And mm-hmm. he said, no, I'm not wealthy because my private jet is the standard jet. You know, I haven't spent a penny on just changing my seats and everything. My friend has a special jet who's from Arabic country. He asked Hermes to change all the seats, you know, so they have a special leather, and it cost them as much money as to order a private jet, you know, because inside seats are super expensive. Mm-hmm. So where do you want to go, and when and how much is enough for you? Unless you have the number, you will never feel that you have more than enough.
That's so crazy. Yeah. I mean, so is there any way out of this trap of comparison? Because I've heard a similar version of this, friends who've built startups in Silicon Valley. You said, you know, you start, you sell your first startup and, you know, you're worth $100 million and you feel poor because your next door neighbor has sold three startups. And yes. So suddenly you go from the guy who hadn't sold a startup to, like, you know, now feeling poor, even though you're, you know, by most objective measures, extremely well off. Like $10 million apparently in San Francisco doesn't mean a damn thing.
Yes. So that's what I'm talking about. And then there is this risk and gain once again. Mm-hmm. So how much do you need to feel abundant? So unless you know the numbers, you're driven to do more, get more. And that usually brings in more stress than you think. So the ideal situation is, I have more than enough, you know, you feel that all the time, and then your income, your asset keep increasing, but you don't pay much attention to it because you're feeling that you have already enough. So instead of feeling like, I don't have enough, I have to do more. So you can feel, wow, I have everything I need. I have more than enough. So, and the feeling that I have so much gives you such a deep satisfaction, and that will make you a more generous person to share.
Well, so we've talked about this from the perspective of people who are extremely wealthy, but I know that you've also written about and even spoken to people who have almost nothing, like relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the stories that you hear from them and how did they think about this? Because I know there's the extreme where you're like living in abject poverty. And then there's people who just don't have a lot of money.
Yeah, so definitely if you cannot make both ends meet, that's stressful. And if you feel like you don't have enough, that is also stressful. So you don't have to give your kids, you know, 10 Michael Jordan shoes, you know, different colors. But at least whatever your kids want, if you can just buy them, you know, or at least if you can afford them, that's a good life. So you have to set some boundaries, but if you have, if you feel like you can pay all the bills without any problem, and if you can do whatever you want financially, I think you're all set. But otherwise, you have to focus on getting paid more and paying less, because financial problem, it's only two problems. One, you're making too little money. The second one is you're spending too much. So I always challenge financially struggling people. Are you spending, you know, money wisely? A lot of people don't. So the mantra I give people is that if I don't buy this today, am I going to die tomorrow? You know, when they go out for shopping. In most cases, you're not going to die tomorrow if you don't buy it now. If it's essential food for survival, you should get it. But oftentimes when we go out in the shopping mall, we buy things that we don't even use, you know. So you have to ask yourself, am I going to die tomorrow if I don't buy this today? And then cut down the expenses so every month you have some money left.
So one of the other things you talked about is this sort of illusion of control. And I think you basically said the only thing we can really control is how we feel about our money. Because like you said, there's an entire system and we bought into a system. In fact, if I remember correctly, I think it was in Sapiens where, he talked about this idea that like reality is just a series of collective agreements. And I got to thinking, I was like, wow, so we all as a society collectively agree that these pieces of paper with dead presidents on them are worth something. But if one day everybody woke up and said these are worthless, like their toilet paper, then suddenly it would mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about this idea, like if that's the only thing we can control, because I think that the people could misinterpret that to be like, great, if all I'm able to control is how I feel, I'm just going to spend like a lunatic.
Yeah, so I think that's a typical spender's idea. You know, they should spend, spend, spend. So whenever I talk about money personality type, nobody is perfect. You know, people tend to spend more. People tend to save more. People tend to make more. You know, it depends on the personality. Like if you have a wrong idea of like the fear of missing out in life, you become a spender. So instead of just saving money, investing money, you spend, spend, spend to feel control. So you save money to feel control. You make money to feel control. So everything we do is to feel control over our finances. It comes out from a different perspective. So you have to have the right balance, especially among husband and wife and family members. You know, some of the conservative ones, they become savers. You know, they become warriors. You know, they worry about money. So the more aggressive one, they are the one who are gamblers. They are the one who are spenders, you know, because they believe in spending in order to grow, in order to learn, in order to experience more. So you have to have some security, but at the same time, you have to have some fun. So oftentimes the cause of divorce is the different opinions around money. So you have to really communicate well with the other. And then the same thing goes with your business partner. You know, if you are, even if you become successful, one wants to invest everything or the profit for the growth of the company. The other wants to kind of like cash out. So unless you are on the same page, your partnership will break up very easily.
Absolutely. Well, so there's one other thing here that you say as it relates to this. You say that don't save money out of anxiety. Many people save their money because they're afraid of the future. They may get sick or lose their job, so they save for a rainy day. This is why people want to save in case something bad happens. But if you save money out of anxiety or fear, you will just feed more fear and anxiety, more blocks to the flow of money. If you're going to save money, save it while you imagine the fun ways to spend it. And I think that's so interesting because like literally in the financial app that I use, there's a default saving, took me to option titled rainy day fund. And like, you're right. I never thought about it. Just calling it a rainy day fund is basically like, oh, this is the presumption here is that something bad probably will happen. I'll be prepared.
Yes. I'll just probably change the name sunny day fund.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, that's a money for future in a sunny day fun picnic day. No. So just change it in your concept. But, you know, North American people and European people are so individualistic. You know, people don't talk about money, even though you're a married couple. So what I'm suggesting is don't rely on your bank account. Rely on people. And the reason why I'm not afraid of money is that, you know, I don't have any debts. And in Japan, I don't have any risk of being sued. So I'm financially okay as long as I'm in Japan. But the reason why I'm not afraid is that because of that, I have many friends who will not let me fall. If I file bankruptcy, I can count on my friend number one and ask him to stay. Ask him to let me stay for 1 week. And I can do the same thing for the second friend for the second week. And I realize I have more than 52 friends. So after 1 year, I can come back to a friend number one and said, okay, it's been a while. How are you? So I can keep going. And if you don't have 52 friends, you can have 12 friends who let you stay for a month. And mm-hmm. when you realize that you have a lot of friends who are generous and who love you enough to support you, then you don't have to worry about the rainy funds. You know, your friends are the rainy funds.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I read that, I couldn't help but think about the Dan Buettner book about blue zones. And he talks about Okinawa being a blue zone. And then one of the big things he points to, and we've seen this in research, we had Robert Waldinger here who wrote the book on that was based on Harvard's longest running study on happiness over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And he said it was mm-hmm. social connections. And yes. I noticed to your point, like, you know, this kind of brings us full circle to the idea of Americans being very individualistic. I've noticed there's a sense of community in other cultures that I don't even see with my own friends as much. Like I think about the fact that, you know, my parents, they have these two or three really good friends. They're all retired. They get together every Friday. But one of my parents' closest friends, I was like, wow, you guys talk on the phone every day and you see each other twice a week just for, you know, come over. It's kind of mind boggling to me that is just not normal.
Yeah. So you don't have to see your friends, you know, twice a week. But when something happens, I have like five best friends that I'll do anything for them. And they feel the same way for me. And I'm now treating a lot of youngsters, you know, for my free advice, free lunch, free dinner. Mm-hmm. So I openly talk about this to them. You know, the reason why I'm taking you guys for dinner for free is because you guys are my pension plan. You know, so, you know, one day I grow up to be an old man and when I lose everything, I count on you guys, and they just laugh, you know. And there are some folks who are just making it financially, you know. I used to teach them in their 20s, and now in their 30s, and they're entrepreneurs, and they have all the money in the world. So at least I have a few guys who are generous enough to support me in my senior homes. So you know, my rainy day fund is already, you know, set up okay. So I think once again, I'm half joking, but I'm half serious because young people who love you so much, respect you so much, could be your pension plan instead of $1 million in your bank account because dollar hierarchy could fall any minute. You know, U.S. is borrowing so much money and your government is paying, you know, billions of dollars for interest, and you cannot go on that way, and the Japanese government too. So your relationship is the pension plan, not your government 401k and stuff.
Well, let's finish this up by talking about the future of money, because one of the things that you say towards the end of the book is that money has not always been inextricably tied to our survival. And I don't think it always will be. There's no doubt that money is useful and we'll always need a way of exchanging energy among ourselves, but money will gradually cease to feel like an energy that controls our destinies. The point is that not that we will live in a world free of money, we will live in a world free of fear of lack of money. That's the key difference. And what's funny about that is that I've heard stories. I think Douglas Rushkoff wrote an article on Medium titled The Richest, where he goes and talks to a bunch of billionaires. And we're talking billionaires. They're building bunkers for the days that, for the, you know, the time that their money becomes worthless.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, I think the ideal situation, the best way to relate to your money is that you don't even think of money in your life. You focus on what you love to do, you know, what you express, what you want to express in the world. And if you can do that with your money, I think money can be your best friend. So in the future, you know, people will be free from money worries. And also, we will pay less attention to money because there are more other important things in life. So it could be art, you know, creativity, friendship, and generosity, connection, bonding, and relationships. They're more important than money. Mm-hmm. So I hope we'll pay less attention to money by itself. You know, money is just a result of what we do in our life. And some people think it's a scorecard, but it's so silly when we just are collecting the scorecards. You know, it's not the game of life. The game of life is happening with your friends and with your loved ones and fun projects that you do. You know, sometimes business, sometimes non-profit, whatever that is, it's your love. The expression of love in your life.
Well, I think that makes a beautiful place to wrap up our conversation. I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I think the feeling that you're in the right place, doing the right thing with the right people. So one of the tragedies of modern life is that you don't know where you want to go, you want to be, you want to go, and where you don't even know who you are. So if you know who you are, if you know that I'm in the right place, it's almost like enlightenment. So you don't have to be a billionaire to have the feeling. If you know that I'm in the right place, I'm in the I'm with the right people or the good people, you're in heaven. So just figure out who you are, what you want to do in your life, where you want to be, who you want to be surrounded with. If you have all the answers, you know, you're just a happy person.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story, your wisdom and your insights with our listeners. Where can people learn more about you, your books and everything else that you're up to?
Thank you so much, Srini. You asked so many intelligent questions, and it really shows you're so smart, intelligent, and generous with knowledge and heart. So I really respect you and admire you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. So you can find me at kenhonda.com. I'm translating a lot of information for free in English. You can check your money personality types. And I started to teach in English now. And I have an online community called Arigato Living Community, where you can learn about happy money and also how to heal money wounds. We meet once a month online, sometimes for European time, sometimes for North and Central and South American time. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy meeting people online. So that's how I that's how I could get to share what I have learned from all the great mentors in life.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolved. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.